This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 9 minutes after 11 o'clock. It is that moment of truth. Yes, the nameless feature that will have a name next week. Starts today and it starts now. I'm very excited about this, and I know that a lot of people on Twitter as well are excited about this new feature and also the topic that we will be discussing today on Twitter, relating to the tweet that I sent out yesterday about today's focus, looking at Candace Ashira's master's thesis on the lack of policy on menstrual health management and socioeconomic impacts. And the big question for me about this is, of course, whether the lack of policy, at least, constitutes a human rights violation. And Rise Makadzi responded to the tweet, and this for me is, it's affirming. She says, "I'm going to go back to listening to radio again." If you are listening, Rise, please do call in and welcome. Welcome back. Welcome back to Talk Radio. I insist that Talk Radio is a university and class is now in session. Hello, everybody. We have Candace Shiwa here, who is with her mom. Hello, mommy.
Hello.
She is in studio. So what she's going to do, I'm going to ask her to introduce herself, tell us more about herself, and then we'll go into the thesis and what exactly it is that she was looking into. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Aldrin. Good morning to your listeners. Thank you so much for having me on this feature. And I think what you're doing is actually amazing because it gives an opportunity for academics, you know, especially postgrads being master students and PhD students to have the platform to talk about their research. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I am Candace Chirwa. I am doing my master's at WITS. Recently have completed my thesis on menstrual health. I also am the director and founder of my NGO called Curate, which focuses on creating educational content in a child-friendly manner. So that is what I do as an academic and as a director of my NGO.
Okay, so I want you now to explain to us why specifically this topic mm-hmm. and just how it's phrased here is due to the vagueness of international law, which is left open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. Where does this leave menstruation as a norm, and how does this affect in supporting menstruation internationally and in domestic context? Mm-hmm. But quickly,
yes,
here is what I flippin' love,
okay,
and this is what this conversation really should be about as well, is in the conclusion. There's great power in speaking openly about menstruation, as it could contribute to the removal of societal and cultural conceptions that menstruation is a shameful and private event that must be kept secret. Thus, the onus lies on international human rights system to lead the way to ensure that menstruation is re-articulated in a way that honors women and girls. I read that and I was like, damn it. That is it.
Yeah.
That is it. So tell us, how did you get to this specific topic,
okay,
and what is it about this topic that you felt that we should be focusing on?
So in 2017, I was approached by the United Nations Populations Fund to do a consultancy for 3 months on the topic menstruation, because they felt that they needed academic support in terms of researching this under-researched, under-studied topic. So for 3 months, I engaged with 23 country offices in Eastern Southern Africa to really understand and gauge as to what it is that they're doing to ensure that the girl child and woman in the workplace can go about their social activities on a day-to-day basis, especially on their periods. And I was fascinated to see that countries like Kenya and Zimbabwe, which are countries that I focus on in my case study, mm-hmm. are actually doing policies, have created frameworks, have created programs that ensure that there are resources and education around ensuring that the girl child is informed, and the boy child as well, is informed and also has the necessary resources to go to school. So the research that I found from the United Nations sort of sparked an interest for me to see what exactly it is that the international human rights system is doing. Because international law sets important minimum standards for states to follow. But then because it's so vague in its interpretation of its language, then it leaves the state as an apparatus not to figure out whether they should go about with ensuring the fulfillment of girl and woman's rights. So the human treaties that I focus on and analyze is the Convention Against Convention on Elimination Against Discrimination Against Women and the Convention of Rights of Children. And those two frameworks are very relevant to menstruation. But again, they are so broad that states are not entirely sure how they can fulfill the framework. Yeah.
But the point that you make in the research as well is that although you'd look at those two conventions, they don't explicitly say this is how we should be dealing with menstrual health management. These are some of the targets that are set. You don't get that at all. It almost felt as though that you said to yourself that there's vagueness.
Yeah.
There's a void.
Yeah.
And that void needs to be filled.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, so what I did is I downloaded these two treaties and I did a keyword search to say, are there any references to menstruation? Are there any references to menstrual health? Are there any references to sanitary? Are there any references to infrastructure? And the allusions that came about was to ensure that dignity is fulfilled, as well as that there is adequate infrastructure. So those two things are relevant to menstruation, but they don't necessarily tackle menstruation head on to say that with the infrastructure, right, we need to ensure that girls have the necessary tools to change their sanitary wear. So for example, we have a lot of these toilets called the ventilated improved pits, which is just a huge drop. And it doesn't have dustbins, it doesn't have sinks. And so a lot of the time, because of the education that girls do not receive about how to manage their menstruation, they tend to throw their sanitary pads in the toilet, right? Because there are no dustbins there.
Yeah.
And that's, that creates a clog in the system. So when we look at what the human rights framework is saying, it sets the minimum standard, but the onus is then on the state to understand what real needs are there within the domestic level.
When you speak about the reproductive system, for instance, and then you say that if you focus on that, if you speak about the reproductive health system, that means that there is space and this is what the governments should be doing. But then you look at Zimbabwe and Kenya, and as you've said earlier on, that they have mechanisms that they've put in place, but are those mechanisms enough? And what really struck me about the Kenyan story and the case study is that in Kibera, I think it is, where the research found that around, 65% of women said that they actually have sexual partners just so that they can get sanitary towels or pads.
Yes.
That for me was like, what? So you go into a relationship because of this. This is what you need.
Yeah.
Because of how pricey it is, first of all. And it's not readily available freely, at least. And there's a campaign that's happening on social media as well as the Sifako Makhato Health and Science University, or what used to be called Medunsa, where they ask the question that if condoms are free, shouldn't pets be too?
Yeah. And I mean, those are the discussions that I have with a lot of us girl children about, the resources that aren't available. They always enter these public institutions and they see female condoms, they see male condoms, but the things that they really need the most is the sanitary pads, right? Because a lot of girls are left in a position where if they don't have access to sanitary pads, then they'll use resources like cow dung, leaves. A lot of girls have reported that they use cow dung, they use leaves, they use sand, and then that further causes a damage to your reproductive system because that can create infections. But we also need to take into consideration, and I would like for us to have a more deeper conversation about the taboos and myths that drive girls that to not be able to go to school. Because apart from one of the reasons of not having the resources, girls have this fear of not being able to attend school, because, you know, there's a system where if your teacher is requesting you to answer the question, you have to go and write on the board,
yeah,
right? So already in your mind, you're like, okay, I've started my period. It's painful. I'm wearing my school uniform. Now I have the answer to this question and I don't want to go to the board and write because I fear that I might have stained my skirt, mm-hmm. right? And they fear that, you know, their male colleagues and the other colleagues will laugh at them. So I think taboos and the myths around menstruation are very important to talk about, because that is one step towards ensuring that we have the hardware interventions, because society already is doing amazing work in ensuring that we have the resources, being the pads, the cups, the period underwear. But now we need to really tackle what is driving girls not to talk openly about what mm-hmm. it's like to be on their period.
And what are some of the things that you found?
So last month, a friend of mine called me. I'm going to start within and then I'm going to expand. So a friend of mine called me and she's like, Candace, I heard something about not being able to cut your hair or wash your hair, because if you do whilst you're on your period, it'll fall off. And I'm like, but girl, you're 23 years old. Like, do you really believe it? And she's like, yeah, I really believe it, because a lot of my family members sort of instill this type of taboo. A lot of things that have happened recently is that, you know, you can't cook, you can't clean. If you interact with livestock, it'll die. Yeah. If you touch flowers, it will die. There was a weird one that I read in Indonesia where if you don't throw away your sanitary pad correctly, ghosts will follow you. So it's it's always doused with fear, you know. Mm. If you don't do this properly, then something bad will happen to you. When in fact, menstruation is this natural phenomenon that really shows this beautiful transition between girlhood and womanhood. And also to take into consideration that it's not only girls who menstruate. You know, we have menstruators that are intersex, and it's a binary inclusion. Yeah.
And when you look at some of these incidents, for instance, some families would say that you're not allowed to cook.
Mm.
You don't touch the food. You don't greet men,
yeah.
because you're going through your cycle.
Yeah.
And those are some of the taboos that you're speaking about.
Mm.
But what is it about these taboos that make it so difficult for women to speak openly about this? When I was reading this research, one of the things that came to my mind was, so this has always been there.
Yeah.
It has always been there.
Yeah.
And if you're Christian and probably believe in Adam and Eve, I'm sure Eve went through the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if this has always been there, what does this then tell us about our parents?
Mm.
What is it that our parents are not saying to us about menstruation and also opening up the conversation? I have a friend who's a girl. And the beauty about having these conversations with TD is that, for instance, when we drive over a hump, she would say that, friend, not so fast because of my breast.
Okay.
She speaks openly about going through her cycle.
Mm.
And that has made it more easier for me to speak to my little sisters about their cycles. And now they feel comfortable to actually come to me and say that, and those are the conversations that we are not having. And that's the reason why I opened up with your conclusion. paragraph in your conclusion.
No,
there's great power in speaking openly about menstruation. Because what it also does is that it busts the myths.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's not happening.
It's very important. I think our parents are not as sex positive as we are as a generation, right? So we have, I think, because we have the tools of social media and we have the information to research and understand it, we are more open to talk about what exactly is going, what is happening to us, especially during puberty and menstruation. I mean, I'm currently dating someone and I feel that it's very important to have these conversations with your partner. Mm. If I'm in a situation where I'm really busy and my period has started, I'm just like, Emil, please go and buy me sanitary pads. And he's like, sure. You know, I think it's just that matter of being confident in having those discussions about boundaries. And we as a generation are very, very sex positive. Unfortunately, I think the education system, unfortunately, is not fulfilling that gap. So our comprehensive sexual education only talks about pregnancy intervention, HIV intervention. Mm. It doesn't include the narrative of menstruation. You only learn about menstruation in biology when you actually see the diagram of the uterus and you see what happens every, 20, 25 days. But you don't. There's no actual comprehensive discussion.
So if you're not a commerce student, then quota.
Yeah. There's no comprehensive discussion about the bodily changes a girl goes through, the stigmas that they go through, and how they can manage, their period. So I think a comprehensive sexuality education needs to be upgraded. We need to upgrade it. We need to level it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
061-987-000. We're in conversation with Candace Shirwa relating to the thesis, her master's thesis that she's done looking into menstrual health management. And I think after this, what we need to look into is to look into the different policies that are available and where government seems to be falling short. And for me, what's very important about this is that when we speak about, as you've quoted Hillary Clinton, when you speak about human rights, we also speak about women's rights. So women's rights are also human rights. Mm-hmm. So functionaries or institutions such as the Human Rights Council, do they even look into this? Is this even within the space that they say that when we speak about women's health, are we actually having conversations about menstrual health as well? Do we speak about what's happening in the workplace? Because the perception has always been when we have these conversations around menstrual health that it ends at access to the pets.
Mm.
But there's a much bigger conversation. Think about somebody who works on a construction site, for instance, a woman who works in a construction site. The facilities that are there, are those safe facilities that when she goes through a cycle, that she can go and change?
Yeah.
And feel that she's in an environment that that has a level of dignity, that understands that she is a woman, but that does not mean that she's incapable of doing what men do. And that's another point that you make in the research as well. So Godwa says on Twitter, menstrual health education for girls is essential. I started menstruating at 12 years and I hid it from my parents for 3 years because I was scared they would think I'm having sex. I work with adolescents in schools, and I realize menstrual health education is needed, and that's the thing.
Yeah,
it is. You go through your cycle, and then the perception is she's having sex.
Yeah.
But what you point out in the research as well, that sometimes actually when you get there, they say she's ready.
Yeah,
ready to have sex. She's ready to get married.
That forms some of the cultural practices. In fact, when a girl starts menstruating, it forms part of initiation that she has to have sex with a man because it shows that, she's ready to have a woman. And this is, again, another social barrier. And I think I was very upset earlier this year when Herman Mashaba made the call on Twitter to say that, we shouldn't be giving sanitary pads to girls so young because we're going to be talking about sex. And research shows that some girls start menstruating from the ages of 8, right? So I always, as an advocate for menstrual education, I'm just like, start teaching them as early as possible, because I think, ages 8 to 19 is the best time. But don't feel afraid to talk about it. You can have conversations about menstruation without having to talk about sex. And I think I just want to tie into the conversation about women in the workplace. So there's no policy in South Africa that actually allows women to have menstrual leave. There are a lot of developing countries at the moment, I think I've mentioned Nepal, that have decisively created a policy to show that women take 3 days off during their menstrual cycle, because women do suffer from intense cramps, right? Mm-hmm. If we also take into consideration that women who work in the factory spaces, who don't have access to infrastructure like toilets, and also don't have the resources like sanitary pads, then are, sort of forced to use materials like, old rags from factories. So in Bangladesh, they did a study where women were working in the factory and they were dealing with toxic materials, and they actually were using the rags from that toxic materials, and they used it as a sanitary pad because they didn't have toilets. There's some policy that actually say that we will deduct pay from the amount of time you go to the toilet. So imagine a woman who's menstruating heavily. Yeah. Imagine a woman who's menstruating heavily and has to always go to the toilet to change her pad or change her menstrual cup, and they're deducting pay from that. So the UK has recently decided to have conversations about that. So there are different countries that are advocating to ensure that women are protected during this time, either through work, either through school. And we also need to take into consideration that there are a lot of children that are out of school. So what do we do in terms of that when they are working or when they're not doing anything?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very multifaceted approach, you know.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's go to Makgabo in Bryanston. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good, good.
Good, good.
I just wanted to comment and say hi to Candace and say you're doing a wonderful, great job with your blog spot and everything that you do for menstrual health. To the discussion, I just wanted to add on, like Candace said, you know, we can talk about menstruation without getting sick. Regarding the comment that Herman Mashaba had made, all I want to say is that, for instance, why as much as pads and so forth are zero-rated and recently became zero-rated vet supply, pads available like condoms for free? I mean, refraining from menstruation is way harder than refraining from sex.
That's true.
Thank you so much for that point. And actually, having a conversation with a colleague yesterday was that the other point about this is that HIV/AIDS is a disease, a virus, whichever one you prefer to call it. And once we find a cure, sure, there's a cure. But with menstruation,
it's we don't wake up and choose to menstruate. You know,
it's there. Okay,
yeah.
Let's go to Power News headlines. It's 11:30. Please do call us on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet me at Aldrin Simpier. Use the hashtag #PowerTalk, and you can tweet at PowerFM987.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
In conversation with Candace Shirwa, looking at her master's thesis that looks into menstrual health management. So you can please call us 0861-987-000, and you can also tweet to us. George in Dobsonville, I see your call. I'll come to you now. Glina says, Aldrin, I just want to say you are doing a great job on the radio. Please keep on pushing like that. You motivate me to tell people to listen to your show. Big up and fit. Thank you so much for that. And then there is this tweet from Uncle Jay, who says, even the Bible itself demonizes menstruation. Most Leviticus chapter 15, verse 19-33. ZCC women are not allowed to sleep with their men on the same bed when they are on their periods. Neither are they allowed to touch the men's uniform. And I've Googled that particular verse. So here it is. I'm going to read it. And Candace, please do respond. So Leviticus chapter 15, verse 19-33, but I'll just read just two verses from it. When a woman has her regular flow of blood, the impurity of her monthly period will last 7 days, and anyone who touches her will be unclean till the evening. Anything she lies on during her period will be unclean, and anything she sits on will be unclean. Anyone who touches her bed will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till the evening. Anyone who touches anything she sits on will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till the evening. Well, yes, it is in the Bible, Candace. It is in the Bible. Just quickly respond to that.
Okay, there we go. The thing is, trying to trace how menstrual taboos have come about is a very difficult one, because a lot of cultures and societies, have this idea that menstrual blood can cause a lot of bad things and a lot of bad harm to people. Even though scientifically there have been studies that show that menstrual blood is actually cleaning so it's basically your uterus lining removing itself and shedding. So it's actually quite clean. That idea of justifying the reason why you're trying to marginalize the girl, child, and woman from social activities because of the Bible is problematic. And we see it in a lot of societies like Nepal, Mali, Tanzania, where They have these things called menstrual huts. Where women are confided and isolated from the community for the duration of their periods. And in those menstrual huts, you know, there are no resources. It's really cold. So in 2017, three girls in Nepal died because of smoke inhalation in these menstrual huts. Mm-hmm. And so it is a human right violation. And yet we have a lot of societies that are still doing it. Even though, you know, the state of Nepal has actually criminalized it, and they pay like 1,000 rand, equivalent of Nepal, a fine if you're caught doing it. But the people are still doing it because of the justification from religion and cultural expectations. So I think that idea of blood being seen as negative and dirty needs to really be backed up by scientific fact.
Yeah. 061-987-000 in conversation with Candace Shirwa. Here's what I want us to look into as well is policy. In SA, for instance, does the policy that we have respond to some of these issues that you raise, whether it be education around menstrual health, but also a prop and safe working environment? Equal Education will tell you about the norms and standards when it comes to schools. Those norms and standards have still not been met. Mm. But then on top of that, then we speak about companies and we ask ourselves, as you've mentioned earlier on, you've mentioned the issue around menstrual leave when a woman goes through a cycle. We don't have those type of things.
Yeah.
What does that tell us?
So nationally, we don't have a policy that tackles menstrual health. I mean, last year, if you were at Global Citizen, President Cyril Ramaphosa announced that 2 billion rand would be allocated to ensure that menstrual health is achieved and implemented. But I think different provinces are trying to drive this whole sanitary dignity program. So in Mpumalanga, it was launched last year where they would ensure that there would be, sanitary pads and ensure that the girl child remains in school. Western Cape, according to the Department of Women, haven't been doing anything in terms of menstrual health. The Eastern Cape is driving a sanitary drive program, but it's all programs, right? And there's not necessarily implementation in terms of a policy framework that discusses what has to happen in terms of the girl child going to school and women in the workplace are protected. So I think provinces are trying to respond to it due to the activism on the ground. But I think that the government actually needs to sit down and consider a policy framework.
But the unions as well, because I think there's a one of the chapters where you focus on the ILO.
Yes.
And how unions have ensured that companies actually respond to some of these demands.
Yes.
And women form part of the working population. They form part of unions as well. For instance, in South Africa, we have the biggest federation, which is called COSATU. The president is female.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think it's, at the end of the day, it's an idea of, I think it comes all to priority, right? So you need to prioritize whether you willingly want to actively talk about menstruation and actively do something about menstruation. I mean, as much as we can have as much female representation, at the end of the day, people will tend to not think about it because it's seen as a private issue, right? And that's one of the implications I talk about, looking from a human rights perspective, how we've had this dichotomy of the public and private split.
Yeah.
And because public issues are seen as issues that affect the men or affect the state directly, and then private issues are seen as gender-based violence, menstruation, sexual and reproductive health, it's things that you tend to think about last, right? So I think, because menstrual health activism is a third wave of feminism, the more voices we have, the more work that we do, we can at least prioritize that trade unions and governments and society actually come together to create the policy framework and to do something about it. Yeah.
Okay, 061-987-000. Ndaba in Ivory Park, good morning.
I'm okay. You know what made me to call today is the scripture that you just quoted about menstruation, you know?
Yeah.
My brother, many people back in the Okfunda Ibhayibhile, with the Old Testament, yeah, well, and that is what is misguiding and misleading our people, yeah, well, because when you read the Bible says in the old dispensation, were living according to the law. So what you were quoting was the law. So today we are no longer living like that. We are living according to the grace of God. So our cleanliness is not because of what we do or how we
sure.
But it's according to...
The thing about this is that the Bible, whether you refer to the Old Testament or the New Testament, it forms part of our religion. And this chapter, for instance, or this verse could be quoted in a Bible class.
Mm.
It still remains there.
Mm.
Listen to Romans chapter 3, verse 21. It says righteousness through faith, not through works. But now, it says 21, but now a righteousness from God apart from law has been made known, to which the law and the prophet testify. This righteousness from God comes through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. Yang Zol.
Okay.
So we must not discourage our women and misinform our women, because we will make them not. Babe encouraged.
And feel comfortable around us as well. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. Lerato and Centurion, good morning.
Hi, Alton. How are you?
Good, Goodwin.
I'm good. Just to discuss this topic of the book of Leviticus, I think that book as a whole discusses a lot of laws and things about living and hygiene and all of those other things. But I think also when you think about culturally, when we look at Africa and we look at things like menstrual cards, there's a theory when it comes to especially the book of the theory in the Bible where those things, those laws were stipulated at the time because they also protected the dignity of the woman. They didn't have the resources that they have in 2019. They didn't have things like sanitary pads. They had to use those raw resources where maybe sitting, the simple act of sitting or lying on a bed would embarrass the woman, and it would look untidy and you know, they would be spotting or bleeding or whatever, or those kind of things. So those at that time, it made sense to maybe stipulate those things to protect the dignity of the woman. But in 2019, obviously, we've got the advancement, we've got those resources, and unfortunately not for everyone, but it doesn't make sense to actually enforce those laws. So I think a lot of people should do further thinking and understanding when they practice and exercise and implement certain laws that are unfortunately ancient laws, even for biblical in a biblical sense, they're ancient laws that were there to maybe to exercise hygiene, but some of those laws don't even apply. Even in that same book of Leviticus, because there's many other laws that are there that don't apply today and are not law today. Mm-hmm. So I think we should just look further than just, and unfortunately, I think a lot of these kind of law, biblical laws are more enforced by men than they are by the women.
Thank you for that call. Janet in Soshanguve, good morning.
Good morning, Aldrin. How are you?
Good, good.
Good, good.
I'm good. Aldrin, I wanted to comment. Let me go to my comment first before I answer the other questions. Aldrin, the missing point on this menstrual partner, there's pets, there's things that the main thing they talk about pets being available for people.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't emphasize the pain that we go through when we menstruate. Ne? And then I'm going to give you this. Ne? There are two examples actually. Ne? There's those kind of women who are on light flow and doesn't experience anything. It's a normal day. And those are the types that we are on heavy flow clothing, the heavy clothes, and again, your body becomes lame. When you have to go to school, you are absent. When you have to go to work, you are absent. And then the law have to look around those things. I'm not saying we must manipulate this, maybe saying every time you book sickness, but I'm saying you find a woman not understanding your point because she doesn't experience the menstruation the way you're experiencing them. And then it becomes a problem. Né? And then I'm sorry to go to over on the biblical part. Né? People must understand it. On the Old Testament, né? It was all things. That's why they say God said, "I will bring Jesus Christ Mupulusi, wish everything will be cleansed away. There are some laws, they were gone and forgotten because Jesus erased those kind of laws and he was the savior. And then these are the people who say, we believe in the blood of Jesus. There are some things we have, don't have to conform to as the Old Testament. We are new people, do things the right way, how they work for us. That's it.
Okay, thank you so much for that call. On Twitter, Pumla says, religions that consider menstruation as dirty, why are women still part of such is beyond my comprehension. Josie says, the Bible vilifies and downplays feminine principles from Genesis. It's not just Leviticus. And then Precious says, the verse was written long time ago because of hygiene issues. There were no sanitary pads, hence women were ordered to stay home because there was lot of blood. Here's the point, though, Candace, is that as much as we are saying that these verses are old or whatever, that the book of Leviticus is old and so forth, when you look at the tweet that actually sparked all of this, this is from
Uncle Jay,
yeah. He says ZCC women are not allowed to sleep with their men on the same bed.
Yeah.
And he goes further down to say that, and before people ask how I know, my uncles and aunties are ZCC members. And I've seen all of these things happen right in front of me, even if someone want to deny it. So it is actually happening.
Yeah. And I mean, the Bible has been existed for so how long? And we're in 2019. I mean, people have been saying we're in 2019, we need to be educated, but sometimes, you know, cultural practices supersede your knowledge of life, right? Mm-hmm. You do it out of respect for your culture and you do it out of respect for, you know, your religion. And I think, you know, it's a thing of we need to have these conversations where you can be able to still be respectful of your culture and your religion, but it's empowering to me as an individual, yeah. Right? It shouldn't disempower me from the fact that I can't sleep in bed with my partner or I can't, you know, go to church. There's some religions where, you know, you can't enter the place of worship when you're on your period. And my question is, how do they know you're on your period, right? Do they have like period detectors at the door and when you walk in, the pastor's like, go away. Like, how does that work?
So
you know, like, what is meant to happen? So I think we need to actively have these discussions, and it always ties in at home. You know, what are parents, what are guardians, what are educators doing? Because they are actively around their children, because they have a responsibility to ensure that at the end of the day, the next generation is period positive.
Yeah.
And that's so, so important.
Cedric in Irene, good morning.
Hi, how are you, Andrew?
Good, man.
I just wanted to add on that what the young lady is doing. She should go and ask the scholars because she's doing thesis and research, because her answer was a bit short-sighted.
Okay.
Remember in Leviticus, her answer in the answering about the scripture, she must cover the religion where it comes from. It was when the Israelites were in the desert for 40 years. Yeah? God, because my grandmother explained it very clearly. He said, these are the how you should live in order to protect against, for example, malwezi, adi, diarrhea. Even if there's a scripture, it says, to aswa. They make sure that you bury the person with immediately, or you letalamolora. So it was not scientifically. Remember, science was not developed then. So now, it was not for us now. It was back then.
Yeah, but I, okay, Cedric, but I think that point has been made over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was just saying they were moving from Egypt
okay.
to Canaan for 40 years.
Okay, thank you, Cedric. Thank you so much for your call, Cedric. Mahabo in Centurion, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just opt not to go into this biblical thing. Because
yeah, let's leave the Bible out for now.
Yeah,
I think we've dealt with that. Yeah.
Yeah, because people will always say whatever they understand.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why is it now that our children are getting into puberty stage very early as compared to when we were growing up? I think the ladies used to see this menstruation around the age of 16 while they are in secondary. And nowadays, these ladies, they are going into puberty stage as early as 9 to 10 years old.
Mm.
What actually triggered that? is there something that was done before, which is not being done now, or is it what is it that is causing this?
Okay, thank you so much, Candace. Have you looked into that?
I did research as to why girls menstruate so early, and a lot of the studies show that it's all dependent on the body and the individual that you're dealing with. So hormones change and develop at such a rapid pace, right? So there's no actual main factor that leads to a certain group. Because, I mean, there's some that start periods really early and there's some that start really late. So it's all dependent on the hormonal and body changes that the girl child goes
through. Could it be what
they're
eating?
I'm not sure. I don't know if there are any linkages to that. Yeah, I can't speak on the bodily changes because I'm not a doctor, more mm-hmm. of a scholar and academic. But I tried to understand why. Because, I mean, I was trying to understand the need for menstrual education, and people were saying that we need to start early because some start at the ages of 8.
Okay.
So I think it's mostly because, you know, different hormones, different bodies, and we develop at a different rate. Yeah.
Okay. I just quickly want us to tackle this. Mm. I'm going to read from it. Despite the Universal Declaration on Human Rights claims for universality
mm-hmm.
and neutrality, mm. feminists argue that the conceptual foundations of the international human rights system is based off a model of human nature which considers the experience of an elite group mm-hmm. as the standard, with non-Western world being mainly excluded from being knowers and subjects of knowledge. And this then brings me to the point that why then did you look at these conventions? Because some of these conventions are conventions that came up from the knowers, those who have knowledge.
I looked at the conventions because, I mean, I don't necessarily see us as the international system changing the conventions. It's already placed within the international system that human rights tends to be beneficial towards Western knowledge. Mm. But we do have systems of knowledge where third world feminism have created a body of literature to sort of prioritize the fact that women's experiences in third world countries can be prioritized and should be included within these spaces, right? Mm-hmm. So they tend to criticize the human rights system, especially international law. So I analyzed what their understanding of international law was through their perspective, as well as bring into their approach as to the opportunities mm-hmm. of including varied voices.
What's the difference?
So the difference is in 1948, you have the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that is based on a principle of sameness mm-hmm. and everyone is entitled to this right and this right and this right. And liberal feminists were, through the works of the first wave feminist movement and suffragists, were trying to get the right to vote and other civil and political rights. But this first wave movement was exclusive of women of colors experiences, as well as outside women experiences, right? So because we have the liberal feminist approach that is then taken to the international human rights framework and integrated with that principle of sameness, then you exclude other experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So you have you know, these conventions like women and development, gender and development, women in development, that try to include women within these human rights framework approaches, but it's not as successful because it tends to be very economic based and not necessarily included of social and political spheres.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's a huge work of literature. And for me to try and get through that, it was trying to look at exactly how the human rights system tends to exclude third world women's experiences and why it's necessary for them to sort of reform that discussion. But my conclusion is that the human rights framework sets the minimum standards, mm-hmm. right? Because their language is so broad. So they say everyone's entitled to dignity, human rights, and da da da, but that is very broad.
Mm-hmm.
So countries like Russia would take that and say everyone's entitled to this, and then the word of entitlement is maybe varied to our sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
So, and as much as the human rights system is flawed, it does the necessary work to ensure that people's human rights are fulfilled.
Okay. And
yeah.
And then on top of that, there is on page 24,
mm-hmm.
Speaking about gender-sensitive policies.
Yes.
But my question there also is that are women sometimes also guilty of pushing these norms around the patriarchy?
I mean, I always have this discussion with my friends where we reflect on how at times we can be patriarchal gatekeepers, mm-hmm. And not even realize it. And I think that's because of how, you know, norms have been so deeply entrenched into us that we never question it. I think I recently started watching The Handmaid's Tale. I don't know if you've watched it.
No.
It's basically like a post nuclear American Civil War where women are basically being subscribed to patriarchal practices again. Mm-hmm. And it basically is a reflection of society that we live in which we are always told to do certain things, always expected of certain things, and we never question it because we just go with the flow, really. And so I think as women, we also need to interrogate ourselves as to what it is that we can do differently,
Yeah. Especially
as future mothers, if we choose to be, and especially as future teachers, future nurses, future doctors, mm-hmm. What responsibility we have to deconstruct patriarchy and instill the positiveness of positive masculinity, Yeah. You know? Yeah. So that's the key.
Vani and Greenstone, good morning. You've got 30 seconds.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Yes, I don't know a few things that was said by Candace.
We're struggling to hear you there, Vani. Can you try speak up a bit?
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, so the terms of culture, work, and school, I just want to mention there that they need to like consider our feelings as women and as school kids, that as school kids, the embarrassment and all is understandable. As a working class, that becomes even worse because now you go to work and then you start your periods and something happens, like for me, instance, where I literally collapse at work. And how do you say it out loud that I collapse because of my periods? So it's something mm-hmm. that we need to consider our feelings, to know that, guys, we are in pain. And if it's a thing that you have to go, not to come to work for, it's something that needs to be considered for such people that have such horrible pains. Mm.
Brilliant point. Thank you so much for that. Just quickly, in 30 seconds, Yeah. In conclusion.
So in conclusion, I think we all have a responsibility to ensure that menstruation is a positive thing that we talk about. Currently, I am running menstruation workshops to offer to school children, organizations, centers that really debunk and allow for the communication of menstruation. We have very fun activities around it. So I think it's really important that menstruation is not seen as a taboo, but it's actually just seen as a natural human occurrence.
Perfect. That goes to what Penny is saying on Twitter. It is applauded that we are discussing menstruation. The more we normalize menstrual health, the better our society will be in understanding women's health. Brilliant point there, Penny. Thank you so much for being part of this discussion.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.